For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
A summer Friday, and cherish it. We don't have many left. In fact, some could argue this is the last real summer Friday of the year. Next Friday doesn't count. It's Labor Day weekend. And then the Friday after that, it's essentially fall. It's football season, so it's over. So hopefully everybody had a good time. Good riddance to the summer. I don't know about you, Ian. I hate the summer. I'm glad it's over. Hold on.
I got a question to ask you about. Yeah. What are you doing tomorrow?
What am I doing tomorrow? I'm going to a Jets-Giants preseason game.
At 7:30. Okay, your buddy Joe Beningo is joining me at Bookends in Ridgewood for a book signing with Marty Lyons and a Q&A. And what do I have to pay you to attend as well? How much money would it take to cover your gas and your tolls?
It's not paying,
I don't know what else on top of that.
It's not paying me, because I would love to. It's paying my wife. Because my wife looks at that Saturday time and says, no. But that's a badass event. So Joe does his Saturday show. Then he's heading on over to, let me read the whole thing. Thank you very much. Heading on over to a Q&A book signing, 1 o'clock Saturday, which
tomorrow,
right. In Ridgewood, New Jersey.
At Bookends,
which is like the premier book place. Joe Beningo, Marty Lyons, Ian O'Connor. So you do a Q&A and people ask you questions like, hey, Aaron Rodgers, really a jackass? Things like that?
Yeah, but I want to make it about football. And so we want to talk about the Jets' chances this year to make a run in the postseason. And I've been talking for 2 weeks, and a lot of the questions have been about the family situation and everything else. I want tomorrow to be about football.
Mm-hmm.
And I think more fans want to get into that as we're getting closer to the regular season. So, yeah, Marty Lyons will be there. And so you do a Q&A with the fans. We'll talk about, can the Jets actually pull this off? And I actually, if you look at it, haunted franchises, at some point they break through. Why shouldn't it and why couldn't it be this year? The Red Sox in 04, the Rangers in 94, the Cubs in 16. At some point, the Jets are going to win the Super Bowl.
They do. They are very, very, very do.
So we'll talk about that and sign some books. And, 1 o'clock tomorrow at Bookends in Ridgewood.
Well,
Beningo's going to be late, though, because he's got to do a show and he's going to hop in the car and get there. But Marty Lyons should be on time.
And he's going to walk in there with his head on fire and he's going to say, Ian, let me tell you this, bro. This freaking team better win. That's his ad. I'm with him, man. They, if they're going to ever win a championship, if they are ever going to break the said curse, doesn't this have to be it? They've got a legitimate top five defense. They have a quarterback who, when healthy, looks like he's still in his prime when you watch him during these practices. I mean, it still zips out of his hand like he's the god he was winning all these MVPs. Like, if they can't win now, if this doesn't work, then you just say to yourself, well, then it's never going to happen.
Well, the football gods put everyone through hell last year.
Yes.
Right? Aaron Rodgers, the fan base. I've never been more heartsick for a fan base and an athlete than I was in the building that night last September. I'd say this. I remember in 2004 covering the ALCS, and I was sitting next to Tom Verducci, the great baseball writer, in the press box at Fenway Park after the Red Sox won game four of the ALCS. So now they're down, instead of 0-3, they're down 1-3.
Yes.
And I turned to Tom and I said, maybe the only way to break the curse of the Bambino is to do something no baseball team has ever done coming back from 0-3 at the expense of the very franchise that has haunted you forever, the New York Yankees.
100%.
And he said, yeah, that'll do it. And guess what? That's what happened. And maybe the Aaron Rodgers injury last year, as heartbreaking as it was kind of just that. That was rock bottom for the New York Jets franchise. It could only happen to the Jets the way it happened four snaps in, right? And now this is the payoff. Better roster. They have a chance, I think, to win that division outright for the first time since 1998, even though they did win
in
2002, but it was a tiebreaker at 9-7.
They still won the division.
Yeah.
They still hosted a playoff game and whipped Peyton Manning's ass.
Yeah. I feel like Aaron's going to make 14 starts this year. I think Tyrod Taylor will go 2-1 in the other three.
Mm-hmm.
Very competent backup, a pro's pro. And I think they'll make a run. Now, will they win the AFC Championship game in Kansas City? Probably not. But if they get a break and somebody knocks off the Chiefs and the draw sort of falls their way, I could see it. At some point, they will win the Super Bowl, and why not this year?
Well, you said something about the Red Sox, and it's so true. And it's actually something Beningo taught me many years ago, and he's turned out to be right. He said this before other things even happened. He said, bro, When the Jets win, if they ever win, it has to be epic. When teams break curses, they just don't win a championship. They do it in some kind of crazy way. You mentioned the Red Sox, obviously. They're down 3-0 against the Yankees. They come back. How about the Cubs? The Cubs were down 3-1 in the World Series to another curse-ridden team, the then Cleveland Indians. They win an extra inning game in a Game 7 on the road that featured a rain delay. Like, think about how they won their World Series. Even the city of Cleveland, the Cleveland Cavaliers, the way they won their NBA title, the way LeBron brought a championship to Cleveland. They're down 3-1 against the dynastic Warriors. Draymond Green's kicking people in the groin. They come back from 3-1. LeBron has the block shot. Kyrie's got the shot. So...
also, the Rangers are down 3-2 to the Devils in 94.
The Rangers,
then the
too.
Messier guarantee. And
absolutely.
Then they win Game 7, of course.
And then they almost blew a 3-1 lead. So I do agree with that sentiment that when a franchise is about to win for the first time in a million years, and the Knicks qualify in this too, they're not just going to win. There's going to be something really epic to get there. And who knows, maybe the adversity of Aaron Rodgers tearing his Achilles 4 plays into his Jet career a year ago kind of fits that. But I'll tell you right now, Ian, if the Jets win the Super Bowl, you're getting a freaking ring because this book is going to get a lot of credit for it. I'm just saying that. Like, if you write a book about Rodgers and then that season they win the Super Bowl?
I have a pretty good track record with subjects after the books come out. Derek Jeter got to 3,000 hits. Obviously, no Yankee had ever done it the season my book came out. Bill Belichick wins his final Super Bowl with the Patriots. Mike Krzyzewski breaks John Wooden's record with his 13th Final Four appearance. Didn't win the whole thing, but yeah, so I'm hoping that happens. And selfishly, yeah, because I have a book out. But honestly, and I wrote this column for the New York Post 2 years ago, I said journalists are not allowed to root for teams, or really even individuals, but they are allowed to root for the best available storyline. And the best available storyline in the NFL, and maybe all of sports, is not Aaron Judge winning a ring. It's Aaron Rodgers winning a ring for the New York Jets, and ending, what's it been, 55, January 69, right? So it's been 55 years.
They've been in the abyss for 55 freaking years.
That's your reminder. You're going to hear that tomorrow at Bookends at 1 o'clock. I'm telling you right now.
I want to hear it when he comes walking through the door in Ridgewood tomorrow at Bookends. But, yeah, so I have a good feeling. My good feelings don't always turn out good, but I actually do have a good feeling about this Jet team, and I do think I've been out of practices. I think you were out there. And
yes,
there is a different tone there. Now, the last couple weeks, I've been too busy with the book. But before that, I could tell he looks different, Aaron. And there's not that same love fest and giddiness that was there last year is gone. And there is a business-like look in their eye. And that's good. I'm glad Saleh had one of the toughest training camps of Aaron Rodgers' career. That's good. And maybe he'll save his job in the process.
Yes, and maybe the Jets will see a playoff game for the first time since the first Obama administration. That would be very nice. We'll get more into football as the show rolls on, including Robert Saleh's decision to not have Aaron Rodgers play tomorrow night. This Jet-Giant game is going to feature very, very few regulars. Now, there is news around the Yankees that I think will make everybody smile. Jazz Chisholm is being activated from the injured list. And the plan is Jazz Chisholm's going to play tonight against the Colorado Rockies. So Jazz, who got hurt not too long ago, it was actually 10 days ago, goes on the injured list. There's a fear, UCL, is he going to need surgery? There's certainly a fear he's going to miss more time than the 10 days that are required. Jazz comes out last week, says, I'm going to be back within 10 days. Aaron Boone's like, yeah, we'll see. Well, guess what? Jazz Chisholm, who is already becoming, you may have to write a book about him. He may be the next guy you author a book about. Because this guy comes over here with all the star potential, hasn't fulfilled it, gets off to a great start as a Yankee, immediately says, stick me at third base, I don't care, I'll do whatever it takes to win, gets hurt, guarantees he'll be back within 10 days, comes back within 10 days. He has had like a perfect start to his Yankee tenure in terms of making fans happy.
I'll say this, he's got good role models. He started with Kobe, right? And then after Kobe's passing, his tragic death, he switched to Jeter and told Jeter, You've got to step up now. You're my guy. I have to admit, I was one of those people when I heard about the injury, I was like, he's going to be out for like 6-7 weeks.
Yeah.
I just didn't like the sound of it, right? UCL, the whole thing. And listen, he brings an excitement and energy and athleticism, a dynamic component to his game that I think the Yankees really need.
No doubt.
And I think they'll need that in October. And he's just got to stay healthy. And I think he has a chance here to be a special player in New York, the kind that he wasn't before. And they do need that ingredient along with Judge and along with Stanton and, of course, Soto to drive that offense.
Having Austin Wells, who's been outstanding over the last month, Giancarlo Stanton and Jazz Chisholm protecting Aaron Judge is incredible. So if you want to say I'm not letting Aaron Judge beat me, great. Do it at your own peril. Because look at those guys. Those are going to be the guys who have a chance to then drive him in. And so Jazz coming back is a huge addition for the Yankees. And it continues to be a great little run for Jazz Chisholm since he's been acquired.
And a great move by Brian Cashman.
Yes. For all the crushing he gets,
yeah,
that was a good one.
And listen, sometimes, rightfully so, sometimes. But man, that was a good move because that is the exact ingredient they needed to inject into that offense. The athleticism
absolutely.
And everything else. So we'll see how it plays out.
Absolutely.
We're in it to win
it. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Greg in Meriden, Connecticut. How you doing today, Greg?
Good, thanks. You guys? So I don't understand how it is that Judge is going to get criticized here for not winning a championship when the main culprit is Brian Cashman. How does this guy get a free pass?
Brian Cashman? Brian Cashman doesn't get a free pass. He gets ripped all the time.
No, he gets a free pass.
Free pass from who?
Credit for winning championship when he inherited the core four and hasn't won anything since they left.
Well,
hasn't
okay.
Hasn't won anything since they left.
Well, a couple of things, because you're saying numerous things. Number one, he did inherit the core four. He did make key moves that helped them win in 98, 99, and 2000. If you want me to cite him, I'll cite him. In fact, Ian, earlier in the show, talked about the acquisition of Chuck Knobloch. That was something you talked about. That was Brian Cashman's first trade as general manager of the New York Yankees. That's number one. Number two, trading for David Justice in 2000. But whatever. We're not going to go through every trade he made in the late 90s.
El Duque was beyond huge.
That was pretty, and he did that one too?
He did.
Okay, yeah. So he made moves. Let's not act like he inherited something amazing, sat there with his thumb up his derriere, and did nothing. That's BS. The second part is, he gets criticized all the time. Like, maybe our last caller's saying he should be fired. If that's what you want to say, say it. We're not going to do that in the middle of August. But trust me, Brian Cashman, I don't know if you agree with this, Ian, as someone that's covered sports in this city for, I was going to say 100 years, but I don't want to make you feel old. So I'll say a significant amount of time.
You could say 100 years. I'm turning 60 in like 6 days. So
you don't look a day like over 51. I got to tell you, I think Brian Cashman takes as much heat as any executive we've seen in a long time in this town.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing how long he's been in that job. And I think that's what it is. That's what drives fans to say what they say about him. He's just been here so long. They're tired of looking at him, I guess, and hearing him. He used to talk a lot more publicly than he does now since the advent of social media. He's dialed it back a little bit. At least he's available. A lot of GMs in towns never talk. But I think Brian still does a good to very good job. Basically, you're in the tournament every year. And once you're there, then you take your chances. I think Hal is very comfortable having Brian run the family business. Brian's part of the family. And Hal then doesn't have to be bothered because Brian is going to handle it. And Cashman has developed thick skin over time. He didn't have thick skin when he was younger. But a lot of his good moves are overlooked, and he has made bad moves at times, without question. But, I think the fans are too quick to overlook the good moves that he makes simply because he's been here so damn long that they are tired of looking at him and tired of listening to him, and a lot of times it's unfair.
I always think about it this way, to kind of put in perspective how long someone's been here. So I am 41 years old. You just said you just turned 60.
Okay? About to. Yeah.
About to turn 60. Mm-hmm. Happy presumptive birthday or preemptive birthday to you. When are you turning 60?
The 29th. What's today? The 23rd? 6 days.
Oh, wow. My anniversary. How about that? We have a little bond.
Yeah.
You know who has the same birthday as you? And I only remember this because I remembered, that's the birthday of my anniversary. Carl Banks. True story.
Yeah. I think Michael Jackson was the 29th of August.
Michael Jackson?
Yeah.
Which one?
The entertainer, the greatest entertainer of all time.
I thought you meant the reliever for the San Francisco Giants. I'm just kidding. No, wow, that's a special
I think,
day.
I'm not 100% sure. I'm pretty sure I remember seeing that.
No, I'm going to look this up.
Michael, that is correct. August 29th.
That is correct. Okay.
Yeah.
Only the greatest entertainer of all time. Of course, he had other issues, but Michael Jackson was born on the 29th, too.
So if you are listening to our voices right now and you are younger than the age of, let's say, 34 years old, okay, 34 and under, which is a decent amount of people listening. You have no idea what the world looks like without Brian Cashman running the New York Yankees.
That's right.
Think about it that way. Like, you're in your early 30s. You're an adult. You have a job. Maybe you just had a kid. You have no idea what a Yankee universe looks like with Brian Cashman not running the show. I'm 41. I barely remember a universe without Brian Cashman running the Yankees. And that just puts into perspective that he's been here for a very, 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 very long time. And one other thing, because I know this is used a lot to rip him. Like, hey, he became the GM in 1998. He inherited all these players. I was listening to another book recently. Andy Martino wrote a book about the New York Yankees. Mm-hmm. I have not finished it, but I listened to a big part of it. And if Andy's upset I didn't finish it, you know who you should blame? This guy. Because this guy came out with Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. And I'm sorry, I put you on hold for him.
You'll get back to Andy.
I'll get back
to Andy.
Andy's
very good. And I didn't have. I was so busy with this, I didn't have time to read his book. But I'm sure it's excellent.
It's very, very good. Yeah. And one thing that should be noted is that Brian Cashman didn't come off a spaceship and just appear with the Yankees in 1998. He was in the organization for a pretty good amount of time.
Yeah.
He was in the inner circle. So when we dismiss, well, he had nothing to do with the core four. Well, he kind of did have something to do with the core four. You can't say he did everything, but I think in any front office, right, it's not one person entirely. There's a collection of people. They offer different opinions. They come to different conclusions. I had a great time listening to that in your book about the Niners' decision to not draft Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, there's one guy at the top, but there's also a million people in an organization that have different opinions on a player.
Well, and one of them was Mike McCarthy, who was the offensive coordinator of the Niners, and he didn't like Aaron Rodgers coming out of Cal as much as he liked Alex Smith coming out of Utah.
And then had to coach him.
Right. And then what happened is Mike Nolan, who might be one of the nicest guys on the planet, was the head coach of the Niners. And he told me that he actually, I could tell he was upset about how it played out. He gets fired in San Francisco with the wrong quarterback. Mike McCarthy said, I had McCarthy 1 year as offensive coordinator in San Francisco. We finished dead last in the league in offense. And he gets the Green Bay job and gets Aaron Rodgers.
The quarterback he didn't want.
After he told me not to draft him. I get fired. Mike wins the Super Bowl in Green Bay with Aaron and has an all-time great player. And that was the end of Mike Nolan in San Francisco. So a very nice man who has never criticized anybody publicly except that time in my book when he sort of ripped Mike McCarthy and said he didn't want Rodgers. We finished 32nd in offense the 1 year I had him as OC, and then he gets Rodgers in Green Bay. So that was pretty funny.
Yeah, it is fun. I mean, it's amazing to think how it's so crazy how sports can work out that way sometimes. Like, who would have known at that time that that's how it would work out? And listen, Mike McCarthy's coaching legacy is defined by Aaron Rodgers. That's the dead honest truth. A guy you didn't want.
Absolutely.
Let's go to John and Nutley. What's up, John?
Hey, Ian.
What's up, John?
Give me a second, guys.
What are you doing? What are you ordering food?
I just wanted to comment on the Aaron Judge.
Yeah.
You know, Willie Mays and Ted Williams are arguably, I don't think anybody would deny it, two of the five greatest baseball players that ever walked.
Mm-hmm.
Between them in 45 years of baseball, they got one championship.
Yes.
I think it's unfair for Yankee fans to hold Aaron Judge to this mantle that he has to win a championship.
You know what the difference is, though?
An all-time great.
I'm going to give you
look
the difference because I
Ted Williams. Look at Ted Williams and Paul Yastrzemski.
I'm going to tell you the difference because I totally get it. Like, I understand. Willie Mays didn't win that much. Ted Williams never won. And in Ted Williams' one World Series, he performed terribly. Here's the difference. Aaron Judge gets to go to the playoffs every year. Every single season, he gets a new opportunity. Ted Williams was in the World Series once, and it was bad, and they didn't win, and that's it. And I think in this new day and age that we live in, where so many teams make the postseason, you're given so many opportunities. So if you fail over and over and over again, that's where the criticism is going to be harsher on you than, say, it was 70 years ago when you had to win the pennant to make the postseason. You had to win your league to get to the postseason, which was the World Series. And I think that's the big difference when you try to bring up names like Ted Williams and Willie Mays and say, what about them? That's a huge difference. Aaron Judge is in the playoffs every year with a new, fresh opportunity to put up massive postseason numbers.
And we do have to point out, you look at his OPS, he's about 230 points lower in the postseason than the regular season for his career. That's notable. He's batting .211. He's got 25 RBI in 44 games and only 13 home runs. So, you know, I don't want to run away from that. I'm telling you that baseball is unfair to the superstar athlete, but he should be better than that.
No doubt. And he gets opportunities to fix it every single year. That's why when someone brings up some of the older names and says, what about them? That's why it's not comparable. You know, if Ted Williams was in the postseason every year and was struggling, trust me, there would have been a different discussion about him. Zen is in Inwood, New York. What's up, Zen?
Yeah, hi. I agree with the old fella who talked about Ted Williams, but since he made that point, I want to go on to my second point. I am tired of the discussion of who is the greatest basketball player of all time, LeBron James or Michael Jordan. Bill Russell won 11 championships in 13 seasons.
We weren't even talking about that, though.
The last two, he would let me finish.
Yeah, but we weren't even discussing this. Why are you, boy? You so mad.
Yeah, you were discussing it before. When the guy said, I'm going to write a book about LeBron James or this guy. No, it's either LeBron or Michael Jordan. They are the two greatest basketball players of all time. That does not include Bill Russell, which is insane.
Yeah, well, Zen's right.
I actually did say that.
Aren't you writing a book about Bill Russell, you mean man?
You know who's really the greatest player of all time? Kareem.
Yeah.
But nobody wants to say that because people don't root for Goliath. And I always feel like basketball fans, they gravitate towards, when they're talking about greatest ever, guys who are a little bit more, not normal size, but just they don't go to the 7-footer.
Right.
It's like they're almost the exception. And so, but Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is never in that conversation. And like, I don't understand how. I mean, he certainly has a case to be the greatest player of all time.
And also, I don't want to create why you're writing a book or would write a book about LeBron James. Isn't it also because, like, it's really interesting?
Yeah, that's the point.
He's the biggest star of our time. It's not about if he's the best of all time or he's this or that of all time. It's that he has been a superstar in our collective lives two decades. So a book about him would be pretty freaking interesting.
And I actually have never said this before, but I was under contract to do that book, and I reached out to a representative of his, and the response was a threat, basically, that if you report anything that is damaging to our client, we're going to hold you legally accountable. That's the first time I've ever gotten a letter like that from a subject that I reached out to saying, I'm thinking of doing this book. I realize it's unauthorized, but I'd love to get a time to explain to LeBron my process and what I do. And in return, I got a threat. So when I get a threat like that, it makes me more determined to do the book.
I was going to say, covering up?
Aaron Rodgers gets traded into my backyard. I actually didn't want to trade off to go to Aaron. I did, and I didn't, because I didn't want to now walk away from a project. And it almost would seem to that person like, well, that threat really worked. And it had the opposite effect. I may actually now go back to that book simply because of that threat.
What do you think that's about?
I don't know.
There's nothing specific that they're afraid of, or is it more that there'd be a negative tone to the book?
It was just, the beginning of it, of the email was actually, hey, thanks Ian for the note and everything else. And then it just got to, we expect all new reporting to be vetted and for us to have a chance to see, which I would. I always give the subjects a chance to. That's why I met with Aaron in Malibu for 2 hours. I wanted to give him a chance to refute things. Not that there are any allegations of misbehavior
right.
or anything like that. And I wouldn't suspect with LeBron that there's any of that. The guy's carried himself the right way for forever. So, but it was just, it just got to, and if you don't do that, or if there are facts in your book that aren't facts and that put our client in a bad light, that we'll hold you legally accountable. And I was just like, are you kidding me? Like, if you say that to me, you have no idea what that does. It's just like, now I'm really doing this.
Yeah, man.
But Aaron Rodgers getting traded to the Jets, it was just too enticing. And I'm like, nobody's ever written a defining bio of this guy. And I think it was a great story, the way it's set up. The Jets, I hate to say it, Loserville franchise, but they haven't won since January 69. So, yeah, I made the trade, but that email really, really inspired me to almost hang on to LeBron.
Yeah. It's like, what are they hiding? And I don't think it's anything in particular, like you said. It's more they're being so protective. Now I'm excited, too. Well, if anything is uncovered, certainly let me know.
I will.
And then write the book, obviously.
Yeah, that'll happen, too.
Your call's coming up, 888-808-1019. And speaking of Aaron Rodgers, Robert Saleh is making a decision to not play him tomorrow night. Is that a good decision? Are we on board with that?
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
fine Friday. Evan and Tiki. Tiki off today. He's on assignment. The great Ian O'Connor, the author of the brand new book, Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers, is hanging out with us. I do want to ask you some very specific questions about Rodgers in the book. We'll do that a little bit later on in the 4 o'clock hour. Now, speaking of Rodgers and speaking of the Jets and the Giants as well, they are playing a game tomorrow night, if you want to call it that. And Robert Saleh has announced that nobody is playing. Now, there are two Evans, Ian. There's honest, independent-minded Evan, and then there's, hey, I'm a fan. I'm a father who has tickets to this stupid game, Evan. The guy who's independent and honest says, good. I'm glad nobody's playing. Like, why mess around? You've gotten your joint practices in. You look good against the Giants. Aaron Rodgers looks healthy. Like, what is the purpose, and really, what would be the positive of putting any of your regulars out there on Saturday night at MetLife Stadium? Now, selfish father Evan says, I got stuck with tickets to go to this game. I'm taking my kids. It'd be nice to see a guy who isn't, you know, bagging groceries in a week and a half. That's a line from Major League. Obviously, no one will be doing that. And so that's where I'm mixed. But honestly, I think Saleh's making the right choice. Same thing with Brian Daboll. Why screw around with these preseason games? Am I wrong?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And these joint practices have absolutely annihilated preseason games because the quarterback can't get hit in joint practices. And we saw Aaron Rodgers throws, what, 4 touchdown passes against the Giant defense. No danger of being hit, but he looks good. Everyone's feeling good. Now, if he really struggled in that joint practice, I wonder if, you know, like last year, I thought it was a good idea to have him play those two series against the Giants, and he throws a touchdown pass to Garrett Wilson, gets everyone fired up, and then, of course, it was an exploding cigar on the night of 9/11. But, yeah, I think that joint practices have basically been, it's been torture for people who have paid money, good money, to go to preseason games because it takes all the incentive out of it for coaches to put first stringers out there, particularly Hall of Fame, franchise-level quarterbacks. You just cannot afford to have that person get hit in a preseason game. And now you're playing 17 instead of 16. Pretty soon, I think they're going to be playing 18 instead of 17. And they got to get rid of the preseason.
They do, and they have to get rid of charging people prices, like full prices or even somewhat close to full prices. I'm experiencing this for the first time this year as a season ticket holder, but it does feel ridiculous when, as you said, they've made these games less meaningful than the joint practice.
So how much is it going to cost you Saturday night, a family of 4, to go to that game? I'm talking parking, I'm talking food, tickets, gas, and tolls.
So there's two ways to look at it. If you're a season ticket holder, you are paying what they're forcing you to pay. So I'll be honest, I'm sitting upstairs, like my new season tickets are upstairs, 50-yard line, but at the top of the building. The price on my ticket for tomorrow night's game is $155 a ticket. I'm not even kidding you. And that's why I actually told this to the Jets when we were there. I said this on the air, and I said it privately to the Jets. I said, I have an idea. Can I give you advice? And the guy said, sure, what do you got? I said, you can send us the same exact bill for season tickets. Same bill, but just put comp on the preseason game. Up the prices for the regular season game. Up it. Doesn't even matter. But for our own mental sake, on the ticket, have it say $0.
That's a great idea. I love that.
And the guy said, I agree with you. It's a great idea. I said, well, I'm not taking any money away from you. Like, you're charging the same amount of money, but to have to mentally think you're paying $155 for this, it's blasphemy. It's so, like, what are we doing?
So what's your all-in tomorrow night with your family of 4?
So I have 2 tickets, so $300 for the 2. I bought 2 next to me for well below face value because people sell their tickets for well below face value. So each one of those was $40, so that's 80. So 380, 380.
Plus food, plus parking.
Plus food. I got free parking, so you know, I'll admit that. I got away with that. Thank you, New York Jets. Throwing the food. We're talking over $450.
Yeah. I mean,
but you know what? The kids insanity. Will have a good time.
That is the definition of insanity to go watch that.
But you know what? You know why I love it, though, in all seriousness? And I think other people listening would have to agree with this. I'm going to give you a positive. I take football very seriously. I take sports very seriously. Like, my wife knows we're not going to a Jets game and leaving early. We're not going to a Jets game and having me leave for the middle of the second quarter to wait online. We're not going to do that. It's an event. It's a big freaking deal. But for a preseason game, who gives a rat's ass? So for the family and for me to be a great dad, it's wonderful. If they want me to wait online in the second quarter for popcorn, fine. If they want to leave early in the third quarter because they're tired, fine. So that's why I love the preseason.
Man, I remember the days growing up where preseason football, everyone was playing. The whole game.
I know.
Right? Now, wait, am I old enough? I'm trying to think. Did they play 6 preseason games when I was a kid? It almost feels like they played more than 4.
See, I don't remember it, but I think it was like in the 80s where they would play 6
or 70s
preseason games.
Even. I think maybe I'd have to go back and double check. It's hard to believe, but some of those preseason games could be wars.
Well, here's the thing. What I remember, and this is sort of depressing, the Jets and the Giants, third week of the preseason, all the regulars would play for 3 quarters. That was always a thing. And so I remember growing up with Jets-Giants preseason game. I don't want to say like bragging rights was on the line. I would never go that far. But it was sort of a real game. It was the dress rehearsal game. I was talking to Tiki about it. That's the way it was for him. He's a star running back. He played 3 full quarters. And I kind of miss that. Like, I miss Jets-Giants being that dress rehearsal thing. Because
yeah,
now it's not.
It was sort of like the Yankees-Mets Mayor's Trophy game.
Mm.
And George Steinbrenner treated that like Game 7 of the World Series.
You're fiery if you don't win that game.
Jets and Giants, that was serious business when they played. And they did play 6 preseason games in the 70s. And, yeah, I don't want to return to that. In fact, I want to eliminate it now. Joint practices, they should do more televising of that and turn that into something and just eliminate preseason games.
Yeah.
I think that makes the most sense because you can watch the first-string quarterbacks all day because they're wearing the red jersey, they're not getting hit, and it's fun watching those joint practices and televise it and
make it
a big deal. And, yeah, I think that that's the way to go. I think they will get there, particularly if they go to 18 games. I don't think there's any way you can have preseason games and 18 regular season games. Just have joint practices, 3 or 4 of them during the preseason and go from there.
Yeah, and because coaches made the decision, and this is really the last 3 to 4 years. It's not even that long, where coaches have mostly decided we're not going to play anybody in these preseason games. And you pointed out joint practices are a big part of it. The extra regular season game may be a big part of it. So as long as they're not going to take it even like a little bit, tiny bit seriously, then there's no point of it happening. So,
I have to admit, I was there when Rodgers threw the touchdown pass against the Giants to Garrett Wilson. It was a hell of a pass.
It was amazing.
And I did feel like that's a good thing. It's a good thing for Aaron to get that out of the way. He was nervous before that game. So I asked him the question afterward. I said, I realized from the outside looking in, given your resume, it's a Hall of Fame legacy and everything else, that it may be absurd to ask this question. But were you nervous, given the circumstances, before this game? It's the first time he was wearing that uniform and playing in front of a home crowd. And he said, yeah. He said he felt butterflies before a preseason game. So I actually thought that was going to be very useful for him going forward. And, of course, we know what happened.
Well, it's funny. So a year ago at this very time, I remember sitting here on a Friday having a debate about should he play in that game. And I was on the side of why play? Like, let's play the risk-reward game. Like, what reward are you getting out of it? And he ends up playing. He doesn't get hurt. You mentioned it. He had some butterflies. He throws a beautiful touchdown to Garrett Wilson. And I sit here a year later and say, okay, what the hell did they get out of it? Like, what the hell did it even mean? For the people that were there, they saw a nice, beautiful play. What did it mean on opening night on September 11th? What did it mean when his Achilles got ripped up?
You know what? It meant something to him because that was in the press conference, and I asked him that question. I was almost afraid to ask because is this a ridiculous question to ask a Hall of Famer? But were you nervous before a preseason game? But again, given the circumstances. And he said it was meaningful when he heard the cheer. I don't know if you remember his answer, and I'll have it verbatim. But it was, yeah, I was nervous. I had butterflies. And that cheer actually settled him down. It was, he said, very welcoming, and he felt really good about it. And we'll never know because he didn't play the season.
No, I know. Yeah, so, that's the thing.
I will say, actually, on the night of 9/11, I thought in the 15 seconds we saw him out there, he did actually look nervous. And he looked like he was playing too fast.
Mm.
And I think the reason I asked him this question, why didn't you throw the ball to Garrett Wilson? He was open.
Yeah.
Right? 3-step drop, bang, yep. Boom. That's why they were cut blocking to clear airspace for a quick pass. Garrett Wilson from left to right was running that in pattern, and he was open. In the NFL, in NFL terms, he was wide open.
Yeah.
And Aaron didn't throw it. And I asked him, and he said he thought the safety was going to crash down, and then he was looking to Lazard underneath to the right, and then by the time he looked back, it was too late. Mm. Leonard Floyd was on top of him. But I think, and I should have nailed this down with him when I sat with him really in Malibu, he wanted to make a big play early in that game to thank the fans for all the love they gave him, not only that night, but the entire summer. And I think he was looking to get something down the field, and that's how he got hurt. But that's an educated guess, and he didn't say that. But he did say that that cheer in that moment did mean something to him in the preseason.
Mm. It's going to be interesting. It's so different this year because, okay, his preseason is over. And barring any kind of catastrophic injury while practicing, his first real game as a New York Jet is going to be away. It's going to be in San Francisco on a Monday night, and hopefully he gets through that game. And then his second game is going to be in Tennessee on a Sunday afternoon. By the time he gets to kind of fix the errors of last year by playing in front of the home crowd, we will have already seen him a lot.
Yeah.
It's so, that's why I really wished when the schedule came out that the Jets were opening at home. Like, I really wanted him. In fact, I wanted it to be a Monday night against Buffalo. I wanted to recreate the whole damn thing and right the wrong. And instead, they give us a Monday night in San Francisco with the same guy who injured him on the Niners now. Like, it kind of sucks, I admit.
It does. And I also think, by the way, he has bad history against San Francisco in the playoffs anyways.
Yeah.
He lost twice to Kaepernick and twice to Garoppolo.
Yep.
But his regular season record against San Francisco is actually good. I think it's 6-3. I might have to check that. But anyway, when the schedule came out, I was like, the NFL office, what are you doing? Are you trying to get him hurt on the road at San Francisco?
Yeah.
I think he'll get through this season. I do. I don't like that opener. I think they're 0-1. But the next four games, you know, they could be 4-1. And so they'll be fine. And I think most Jets fans would sign up for 14 starts as long as the injury part of it is in the middle of the season and he's healthy for the playoff
run. Yes. I think the number I gave where I would sign up for is like, if you give me 13 to 17, I'd be pretty happy with it. Because I like the backup. I like Tyrod Taylor. I kind of trust him. Yeah. Now, obviously, it's not missing the last four games of the year and then never coming back. But I do expect 40 off an Achilles. It may be asking too much for him to play all 17 games. But I'm damn excited. And it's going to be surreal. Because no athlete outside of Durant, and that's only me and 13 other people who cared as much, has received this much anticipation and hype to watch him play. Because we haven't seen him play. Like, they make the trade for him after months of speculation. They bring him in. There's this huge offseason. He's going to Knick games. He's going to Ranger games. We're all excited. We're about to see him play. Four plays and he's done. Then we talk about him again for another year. He may come back. He's doing this. He's running for vice president. By the way, good job, Aaron, not taking that job, considering your boss decided to quit already. So you would have been out of the VP sweepstakes because your boss basically said, I'm not running anymore. More on that in another location. Anyhow, we haven't seen him play, and it's been a year and a half. Like, there has been no athlete this side of Durant, and again, that's me and 30 other people.
Oh, I care. I cared. I remember waiting for Kevin Durant. I was excited to see. Yeah,
I
was with you on that.
And, thank you.
And recency bias, because he's gone now, and it feels like it was 10 years ago, and it wasn't. But Aaron Rodgers, I had never, in doing this for about 37, 38 years in New York, I have never seen such a mutual love fest between New York fans and a superstar athlete coming from another market than we saw last summer.
No doubt.
And
no doubt, man.
It was beyond heartbreaking. I have it in the book. I think you know this. I drove his parents to the game.
Yes.
Even though they're strange. And I remember when he got hurt, they were the first people I thought about sitting there. They were on the 25-yard line about 30 rows up from the Jets bench. And just what they're thinking. And they had Jets gear on. And the fans obviously had no idea who they were. And when I drove them home after a devastating night, obviously, his mother, Darla, said on the ride home, you know, in the third quarter, we became Jets fans.
Wow.
Because that's how great that crowd was. And I thought it was a real tribute to Jets fans because that is the most charged and electric crowd I've ever experienced in a regular season game ever in New York.
I agree. It was the first time and maybe one of the only times MetLife Stadium legitimately felt like Jet Life Stadium.
Totally.
As the cliche says.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one. Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.